Okay, I'd like to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Job chapter 2, 1 through 10. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, "From whence comest thou?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one who reveres God and shuns evil? And still he holds fast his integrity, although you moved me against him to destroy him without cause." And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his own life. But put forth your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, he is in your hand, but save his life." So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him, this is Job, Job took himself a potsherd or a piece of broken pottery to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, "Do you still retain your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said unto her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive calamity?" In all of this, did not Job sin with his lips? All right. In his initial trial, Job had submitted to God, though the Lord had let Job lose all of his possessions. As we learn in our previous lesson in this series, Job was the most righteous man on earth in his time, as is evidenced by God's blessings of wealth given to him. He was apparently the wealthiest man there in northern Arabia where he is from in Job 1-3. Job 1:1-3. His devout spiritual oversight of his family. Remember, Job would offer sacrifices for his children whenever they had these parties, these birthday parties, just in case they would have sinned and cursed God. And even in God's remarks to Satan about Job, God himself in Job 1:6-8 said that there wasn't as righteous a man as Job in the entire earth. Well, Satan had replied saying that if God withdrew his blessing of Job's possessions, he would curse God to his face, suggesting that Job submitted to God only for the possessions that God gave him, and slanderously implying that God cannot make people follow him unless he materially blessed them. Well, to prove Satan's charge wrong and to mature Job in his relationship with the Lord, God permitted Satan to harm Job's possessions, resulted in Job's losing all that he owned, including his children. Well, Job had refused to curse God in this severe trial, and it proved Satan's charges to be wrong in Job 1:20-22. However, in an added trial, Job faced the loss of God's blessing to himself on a personal level, and that's the chapter that we're looking at this morning in Job chapter 2. Satan persisted to charge Job before God with heartlessness, claiming he was willing to lose his animals, his servants, his children in his first trial to save his own skin, but that if God stopped blessing Job himself, Job would curse God to his face. Accordingly, God gave Satan permission to do as he willed to Job's person, but not to kill him. Satan then struck Job with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. A disease that matches Job's symptoms is pemphigus foliaceus, or inflamed ulcerous sores, itching, verse 8, degenerative changes in facial skin, verses 7 and 12, loss of appetite, we're going to find in chapter 3, verse 24, depression, chapter 3, 24 and 25, loss of strength, 6:11, worms in the boils, 7:5, running sores, 7:5, difficulty in breathing, 9:18, darkness under his eyes, 16:16, foul breath, 19:18, loss of weight, 19:20 and 33:21, continual pain, 30, verse 17, restlessness, 30, verse 27, blackened skin, chapter 30, verse 30, peeling skin, verse 30, chapter 30, and fever, chapter 30, verse 30. So it's a very miserable experience. This isn't just a bad case of measles. We're talking about something a lot worse. And anyway, Job then took a potsherd, which would be a broken piece of pottery, to scrape himself, and he sat down among the ashes. on or near a pile of dung ashes and garbage outside the city. For missionaries in primitive cultures have reported that pemphigus foliacea patients have soothed their sores with ashes. They've actually seen people with this type of situation in third world countries. Very miserable kind of existence for people to be in. But they're itching all the time, they're in agony, so they sit among the ashes, and the idea is the ashes are supposed to absorb some of the problem. And it's like, what, put calamine lotion or something on measles, I don't know what it is. Anyway, but this is what they do to relieve their agony. So Job faced personal humiliation as a social outcast, fallen from his former position as a local judge at the city gate. We know in Job 29, verse 7, he had been a man who was highly regarded and official at the city gate. On top of all this, Job's wife urged him to forget his integrity, related to the word blamelessness in chapter 1, verse 1, to curse God and as a result, die. His wife had come to the conclusion, since there was no obvious reason from God as to why this was happening, then God wasn't good. So curse God and die. This, incidentally, happens to be the ideology that occurs in our country today. If I were to go to probably any classroom in a secular college or university, and sadly even to many classrooms in Christian college and universities, and present the fact that Job's wife here was wrong in saying that since God had not explained himself and had allowed Job, who was the most righteous man on the earth, to be struck this way, that therefore God God still didn't have the right to be questioned. A lot of people would mock that and say, wait a minute. You have to presume if God is supposed to be a good God and he allows something to happen to you and he doesn't explain himself to you, he's not good. The implication is God owes us an answer. And that's because we've developed a humanistic ideology in our country where man and man himself views himself as the center of the universe, not God. And as a result, God owes me an explanation, God owes me being good if I've been good, kind of a thing. The Bible presents a completely different view of reality. The Bible presents the reality that God created man. So man was not created for man, man was created for God, for God's pleasure. God doesn't owe man an explanation for anything. He really doesn't, because he created us. But if I were to share that in a classroom, a lot of profs and students would not accept it. Anyway, regardless of this intense trial on his person, Job did not sin with his lips. Job replied to his wife that she had spoken as a foolish woman, the Hebrew word for foolish being nabal and meaning spiritually ignorant and non-discerning. For trouble, and ra is a Hebrew word, it can mean evil, it can also mean calamity. And I think in the context here, he's talking about trouble. Trouble as well as good comes from God. Ecclesiastes 7:14, Lamentations 3:38 brings this out as well. Now this view dramatically counters, like I've said, current popular man-centered presuppositions that trouble means God's very existence is questionable. Job realized that human beings did not live for or unto their own pleasure, but were creatures of God made for his pleasure and glory. Truth provided by revelational evidence which comes from God. Accordingly, in all of this, Job did not curse God, neither did he sin with his lips. When God then let Job face a dreadful physical affliction that harmed his social and marital life, he did not curse God to his face as Satan had charged that he would, but Job submitted to the Lord's sovereignty in it all. So we need to love God apart from what he provides, even for our persons, that we submit to him, though he lets us lose our health and or our capacity to interact effectively with other people. May we not view trials using human viewpoint that can err, as in the case of Job's wife, but may we rely on Scripture's view, as did Job. It's interesting how this, I really appreciate this lesson, because there were a number of trials that I have faced as a pastor. Some of these have been in family life, especially with health issues. I remember when my wife had a ruptured appendix, had to have emergency surgery, The doctor didn't know if she was going to make it and so forth. We were at Nepal at the time, and we didn't have health insurance at the time, so we rung up this big bill. And I went up to talk to the business department, the lady there, and she tried to strong-arm me in twisting the arm of the church to give to pay for this bill. And I wasn't about to do that because that's against our beliefs. You know, we're not supposed to pressure people to give and everything. And I didn't know how to answer her, but she was getting madder and madder, more and more upset with me because I wasn't just going to come up with the money. And finally, since they were subsidized by the federal government, she had to tell me something, which was very interesting. She said, "Now I have to tell you that if you start to pay something on this bill, even if it's as low as $25 a month, if you start to pay on it, and every month you come up at least with that money, or if you increase it, don't decrease it from that point on, then there's no lawyer who can touch you, because there was a special law in the books in the federal government at the time." So I said, "Fine." We decided to start paying her. We could afford $35 a month. So we started paying $35 a month. We paid for years on that thing. We eventually got it up to $85 a month, and we eventually paid it off. So we were very grateful. But that was a huge trial at the time, because I didn't know how we were going to handle this. We didn't have health insurance through the church or anybody. And my wife, you know, was in the hospital. I had three children at home, small children at home, didn't know how we were going to deal with this situation. Thankfully, a number of the ladies in the church came through and they helped us do chores around the house so that I could continue functioning as a pastor and so forth. But that was a tremendous experience in retrospect. Wouldn't want to go through it again, but in retrospect, because it taught me the same lesson here. I didn't know why the Lord allowed that to happen at the time, but in retrospect, I see He was training me just to follow Him. Not to question, not to demand answers from Him, just to follow. Because sometimes you get into situations that are way over your head, they don't make sense, humanly speaking. And the temptation is to chuck it all and stop serving the Lord, stop living for Him. That's the worst decision in the world to do. For all we know, the evil one could have been involved in that whole situation. We don't know. But Job answered the Lord properly here. Now, Job's going through something that's even more intense. He's going through physical suffering on top of this. Not only has he lost everything, and his wife's told him to curse God and die, but he's going through a tremendous amount of discomfort, this physical situation, and also he's been humiliated. He's basically lost his job as a judge because of his skin situation, and on top of that, and yet he still did not deny the Lord. So Job was a tremendous example for us on handling suffering. In fact, there's a reference to him in the book of Hebrews that holds Job up as an example of patience. And I want to just take a brief period of time to look at that. I think it's Hebrews, where are we here? Is it Hebrews chapter 5? Oh, it's James. I'm the wrong book, I'm sorry. The book of James. James chapter 4, and then on into 5. Verse 10 of chapter 5. "Take, my brethren, the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering affliction and of patience." And then James 5:11, "Behold, we count them happy which endure. You have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy." And of course, the end of Job's life, the Lord returned everything back to him. His wife came back to him. He got his health back. He had more children in his flocks and so forth, multiplied, and they were double what they had been originally. So God is merciful. He is pitiful. Even if we don't understand all that he does or all that he allows in our lives, we have to go along with it because he's a good God. Okay, we'll open it up for questions or feedback. It could be on this subject. It doesn't have to be. It could be on something else.